This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. Our feature text this week is John 4, verse 9, where it says, "The Samaritan woman said to him, 'How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?' Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans." Now, this week, I want to begin a three-part contemplation of this scene in John's Gospel that took place at Jacob's well. There's three ways that we can approach this story. The first way is to note the cultural context. In other words, the meaning within which Jesus was associating him being a Jew with a Samaritan, looking at the prejudice that existed there and why that was present. The second way to approach this story is to look not at the fact that Jesus was talking to a Samaritan, but that he was talking to a woman, according to first century Palestinian patriarchal standards. And the third way to approach the story is to see how Jesus relates to anyone, regardless of who they are, but someone specifically who might be ashamed of a past that they're defining themselves by that causes them to feel shame. And we'll look at each of these over the next couple weeks. But for now, I want to begin with part one, and I wanted to look at this story through the first way that you can approach that. Now, let's look at it for a second historically. Who were the Samaritans in the first century? The original split between Samaritans and Jews is interesting. The history of the Jews and Samaritans, though, it's a complex history. And they're just like, if you can imagine a divorced couple, both sides have two different stories of their split. And it's true with the Jews and the Samaritans as well. But one thing is for sure, their history is rooted in schism. Samaritans claim to be descendants of the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh, as well as some of them, as well as the tribe of Levi. But after the death of Solomon, the kingdom split, as many know, into two parts. You had the northern tribes of Israel, whose capital was Samaria, and the southern tribe of Judah, with its capital at Jerusalem. And the second anchor point or milestone along their history is not, if the first point is the division of after the death of Solomon, the second anchor point is the return after the exile. The schism continued, and within the narrative of the Jews returning to their homeland, they were being given permission to rebuild their temple again in Jerusalem. And when the Samaritans, which claimed to be remnants of the northern tribes that had survived after the dispersion of the Assyrians, when they heard that the temple was being rebuilt, as kinsmen, they wanted to help. And it says that they approached Zerubbabel and the heads of the families and asked to them, "Let us build with you, for we worship your God as you do, and we have been sacrificing to him ever since the days of King Esarhaddon of Assyria, who brought us here." But Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the heads of the families in Israel said to them, "You shall have no part with us in building a house to our God, but we alone will build to the Lord, the God of Israel, as the king Cyrus of Persia has commanded us." And that's in Ezra 4, verses 2 and 3. And Zerubbabel, discerning that the Samaritans' worship of Jehovah had over time become kind of synchronistic, in the sense that they were worshiping Jehovah, and that was for sure, but they were also worshiping other gods. There was other gods that had, the worship of other gods that had crept into the worship of Jehovah as well, the gods of the surrounding nations. And Zerubbabel considered that these descendants of the northern tribes, they were no longer true Israelites. He made a judgment call there, and he basically estimated that they were not fit for helping in the rebuilding of the temple. And the third anchor point, the first being the division of the north and south after Solomon, the second point being Zerubbabel's history there, where they offered to help rebuild Jerusalem but were refused. And the last one is in the Maccabean revolt. And this one would have been the most prevalent in Jesus's day, the closest to the closest historical event to that culture. The last straw was during the Maccabean revolt, when under Antiochus Epiphanes, a holocaust of the Hebrew people was being attempted in Antiochus's effort to Hellenize his entire kingdom. And during this time, the Samaritans, wanting to be spared, they repudiated all connections of kinship with the Jewish people. They basically distanced themselves from the Jews, and they were spared as a result of this. And this is why, above all, This was why the Jews hated. This is the root of the source of the hatred by the Jewish people in the days of Jesus. They had been deserted, even though they had been not necessarily included by the Jews in the covenants by Zerubbabel, starting with Zerubbabel and others. When it came time to come together against a common enemy, they sided with Jews, the Jewish enemy, the Greeks under the Seleucid Empire. And Jesus, over and over, and this is what makes it so kind of confronting what Jesus did. These are not just religious enemies; these are political enemies. People that there's a political history there as well. Now with Antiochus, and over, Jesus refers to this history with the Seleucids in his ministry. We've covered this before in Luke 4. And Jesus was not only wanting to teach the Jews in his day to love their present enemies, the Romans. He also wanted to teach them to love their historical enemies, the Seleucids. And that's why in Luke 4 he references Sidon and Syria. And again, we've covered this in other areas. But he wanted also the Jews to learn to forgive and embrace their Samaritan brothers and sisters as well. And due to their rejection during the time of the temple reconstruction in Jerusalem, the Samaritans had built their own temple on Mount Gerizim. The Samaritans also believed that Mount Gerizim was the original place of the binding of Isaac by Abraham, and that it possessed a rich tradition of worship within the history of the Hebrew people. And also in Deuteronomy 11:29, Moses had said, "When the Lord your God has brought you into the land that you're entering into to occupy, you shall set the blessing on Mount Gerizim and the curse on Mount Ebal." So the Samaritans, like the Jews in the time of Jesus, they believed in one God, in Yahweh, the same God recognized by the Hebrew people, the Hebrew prophets. They taught the Torah as it was given by God to Moses. Yet they worshipped on Mount Gerizim, which they believed was the true sanctuary chosen by Israel's God, rather than the sanctuary at Jerusalem, which was associated with Judah's God. And it's true that in Jesus' day, the Samaritans, their religious belief, their system of belief had become a hybrid, so to speak, of worship of Yahweh combined with other beliefs associated with the worship of other gods. But in the time of Jesus, both Jews and Samaritan religious leaders taught that it was wrong to have any contact with the opposite group. Neither was to enter each other's territories or even speak to one another. And Josephus also reports numerous violent confrontations between Jews and Samaritans throughout the first half of the first century. And what we have to be confronted by and take note of to recognize is that Jesus ignores all of this history, and he sees the Samaritans as children of God just like himself. And he treats them accordingly. He treats them equally with the Jews. This is why the Samaritan woman was so shocked. Again, our feature text in verse 4, it says, "The Samaritan woman said to him, 'How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria? Jews do not share in things in common with the Samaritans.'" And Jesus repeatedly confronted the tensions between the Jews and the Samaritans. He told the story of the Good Samaritan, whose actions Jesus contrasted with the Jewish religious leaders of his day. And Jesus told the story of a Samaritan leper who was the only one out of 10 lepers, and the other 9 being Jews, that came back to say thank you and to worship Jesus. He rebukes James and John for wanting to call fire down on the Samaritans and destroy them. And Jesus did not relate to Samaritans according to the Jesus story. He didn't treat them according to the scripts that he had been handed by the Jewish culture. He rejected the rules, so to speak, that he had been handed on how to play the game between Jews and Samaritans. He ignored all of that, and he looked at the Samaritans through a lens that was shaped in his picture of God and how he believed that God saw those Samaritans. And notice the woman reveals in her dialogue with Jesus how the Samaritans still claim to be descendants of Abraham and still followers of Moses. In John 4:12, it says, "Are you greater than our ancestor Jacob, who gave us the well with his sons and his flocks drank from it?" And in the dialogue as it continues, she says, "Our ancestors," talking about the Hebrew people, "worshipped on this mountain." And remember, the Hebrew people originally worshipped on Mount Gerizim before the temple was built in Jerusalem. This is where the temporary temple was. But you say that the place where people must worship is in Jerusalem. Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when you will worship the Father, neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You worship what you do not know. And both the Jews and the Samaritans had been influenced by Hellenization by this time. So what Jesus is saying here when he says you worship what you do not know, I think it would be unfair to interpret this as a jab at the hybrid nature of the Samaritan worship. The Jews, too, contained some level of a hybrid worship from Greek influence. And that's what a lot of the debates between the Pharisees and the Sadducees was all about. But rather than the Samaritans' belief system, look what Jesus is saying. The Samaritans believed that the Messiah would come from their lineage of the northern tribes, of which they believed that they were descended. And so Jesus is saying, you're worshiping what you don't know. We worship what we know, for salvation is from the Jews. Jesus is clear in what he means by this. The Messiah was to come through the lineage of Judah, and thus the Jews. The Messiah would be for all people, but it would come the saving, healing Messiah, restoration of the Messiah would come through Judah, not Israel. But the hour is coming, he said, and is now here, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father seeks such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. And I want to unpack this part a little bit too before we're done this week. First, Jesus says the hour is coming, but also is now here. The hour that they had been looking forward to, according to Jesus, it had arrived. And he's saying that the shallow outward signs that they identified each other by, which temple this mountain or that mountain do you worship on, these debates that are rooted in space and in time, they would no longer be what distinguishes the true worshipers of God. True worshipers would, through Jesus, worship God in spirit and truth. And let's look at what Jesus meant by spirit first. Paul's understanding of Jesus' use of spirit is seen in 2 Corinthians 3, where Paul contrasts the spirit of the law with the letter of the law. And the original Hebrew people, remember, they were a community that was formed, centered in the teachings of Moses. And this was a community to which certain promises had been made. And one did not earn a position within that community by following the teachings of Moses. One simply demonstrated a desire to be a part of that community by endeavoring to follow that community's teachings, the teachings of Moses. Jesus comes to create a new humanity, a new human community. It's rooted, it comes out of this Jewish community, but it's now centered around his own teachings. And today, one doesn't earn a place in Jesus' new human community by following his teachings, but we do demonstrate that we desire to be a part of this community and part of this new world that Jesus is recreating by endeavoring to follow the teachings of this Jesus in whom this new world is centered. And Jesus' teachings are found in the Sermon on the Mount. This is Matthew's compilation of the teachings of Jesus into three chapters. And although they are of the same spirit, and notice that word, they're of the same spirit of the Law and the Prophets, Jesus' ethical teachings are deeper, they're broader, they're even more demanding at times than Moses' ethical teachings ever were. Jesus' teachings are a fuller revelation of God, ourselves, and others, and the way that God calls us to live. And at times, following the spirit of the law in Jesus will be a deeper expression of the letter of the law found in Moses. You can find this in Matthew 5, 21 through 28. And sometimes even following the spirit of the law will be a direct contradiction of the letter of the law found in Moses. And you can find that in Matthew 5, 38 through 43. You can also see this contrast between the spirit and the letter when it's not just something deeper, but actually calls you to do something different in the woman of Luke chapter 8, the woman of John chapter 8, and the accusation of the early Jesus followers in the book of James, remember, was that they were lawless because they were following the spirit of the law in Christ Jesus, which leads me to the next identifier. And, the first one is they would worship him in spirit, which is the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law, and they would worship him in truth. John 2 contrasts the law that came through Moses with the truth that came through Jesus in John 1, 17 and 18. And this was hard for some people because they ask, what are we to make of the contrast? I mean, isn't the law true? And it is true that both Jesus and Moses belong to the same moral trajectory. But God, through Moses, was leading them as far as they could possibly be led at that time. The Torah of Moses was not God's ideal. It still included nationalism, polygamy, slavery, lex talionis, which is an eye for an eye. It involved the way of sacrifice, which has pagan origins in Matthew 9:13 and 12:7, where Jesus shows that, and violence against one's enemies. All of this was part of the Torah, and Jesus moves us further toward an understanding of God and the truth about God that eliminates all of these. In the spirit of the law, we no longer follow lex talionis. We reject slavery, reject polygamy, we reject nationalism and tribalism, and we reject the way of sacrifice for the way of mercy, and we reject violence against one's enemies. Like what the early church taught, that we would rather have our own blood shed than stain our hands with the blood of another. So John states that you can have all of the Torah, but because the Torah was moving only as far as the people in Moses' day could move, that you truly did not see God still until you had met Jesus. And again, this is John 1:17-18. And there are some things between Moses and Jesus, again, that are the same. When you follow the Spirit, you'll be in perfect harmony with the letter. But there are some things within their teachings that are radically different. And it's much the same way that I'm teaching my 6-year-old son right now not to talk to strangers, while I'm teaching my 17-year-old how to talk to strangers effectively. I'm the same parent in both situations, and yes, these are contradictory rules, but my children are at different places in their development, and thus they need rules at different stages of their development. And Jesus comes and says, yes, you followed Moses, you followed Elijah, you followed the law and the prophets. Now it's time to follow me. Now it's time to create a community that's centered around my revelation of God, the way that I'm telling you to see yourselves and everyone else around you, and the ethics that I'm teaching you. These ethics, this is truth, this picture of God, this is truth. What Jesus is telling this woman is that he's come to initiate a new humanity, a new human community, which would no longer be distinguished by external arguments over the Torah or over the teachings of Moses, like do we worship on this mountain or that one. It wouldn't be rooted in external, performance-driven, even time-space debates, but rather this community would be centered around Jesus and Jesus' teachings. And once again, these teachings are of the same spirit of the Torah, but they offer a much truer revelation of God than the Torah ever could. The Torah, again, was moving in the right direction, but it didn't take the Israelites as far as Jesus did. And how God sees ourselves, how we're to see everyone else around us, that's radically different between Jesus and the Torah as well. So the woman finishes with, I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. And when he comes, he will proclaim all things to us. And there's that us again, the Samaritans, believing that the Messiah was going to come through the northern tribes of Israel rather than Judah. And that's the part that Jesus said that she was ignorant of. But John 4:25-26 ends with Jesus saying to her, I am he, the one who is speaking to you. Jesus pulls back the veil here and shows her that this Messiah that she's looking for, yes, this time that is coming that she was hoping for, that it was present, it was now, that Jesus is the one from Judah who had come, and his kingdom would not be like the Jews had claimed, excluding the Samaritans. He had come to welcome the Samaritans and the Romans and anyone who would desire to center their lives around him and his teachings and this new world he was seeking to create. And that was what was going to comprise this new human community. Jesus said the time is now. The new community would no longer be defined around arguments over Torah observance. This new humanity would be centered around, again, a new way of seeing God, a new way of seeing ourselves, and a new way of looking at everyone else. And a new way of looking at these three things inspires us to want to live according to the ethical teachings of Jesus found in the Sermon on the Mount. And the time is coming, and now is, Jesus said. Christians, Jews, Muslims, Samaritans, they've all fought historically over this ground that the well is built on, this well from Jacob. And each has taught that it's wrong to associate with other groups. They've continued in the worship, not of the God of Jesus, but of the God of us and them. And today, we have to allow this first revelation of Jesus talking to this Samaritan at Jacob's well to confront us. Jesus did not participate in the us and them belief system. Today, we have Christians with different theologies who claim to follow the same Jesus. And it's many times communicated that it's wrong or even dangerous to associate with them, the other Christians who don't believe like we do on certain issues, and that we have to associate with just ourselves. A list of doctrinal truths or lifestyle behaviors has become a test of who are following God and who are not. And today, Jesus would say to this group, just like the woman there at the well, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And today we have multiple world religions. Critics ask, if all religions teach peace, then why can't they all just get along? And they each teach to varying degrees that it's wrong or dangerous to associate with those of a different creed or a different religion. And a religion or a religious creed has become the test of who are following God and who are not. And to this, Jesus would say, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And today we also practice dividing the world between Jews and Samaritans by nationality. We consider the West's attitude towards like the Taliban or anyone who disagrees with this view is sympathizing with the enemy and probably a terrorist. And such disagreements must be met with violence, we're told. And anything less is unpatriotic or treason. And tribal loyalty, basically, has become the test of who are following God and who are not. And to this, Jesus would say, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And today we practice dividing the world between Jews and Samaritans by economics. Whether it's the refugee who appears at our border that we turn away, or the foreigner, the foreign worker who threatens our jobs, we respond with territorialism rather than hospitality, and self-interest instead of sharing, and fidelity to capitalism has become the test, in America at least, of who are following God and who are not. And to this, Jesus would say, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And today we practice dividing the world by race. And I know this is not apparent in all places, but where I live, racism is still very much alive. It's appalling that it exists even within Christianity, within Christian groups and denominations, segregation. It's appalling that any group bearing the name of Jesus would still practice segregation. We all drink from the same cup, the Lord's table teaches us. But some denominations still say that it's best for everyone not to integrate. In some areas, the skin color of one's congregation is still the test of who are following God and who are not. And if you try to mix those, then you're in trouble. And to this, Jesus would say, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And today we practice the way of dividing the world between Jews and Samaritans in matters of gender. I know of religious communities that teach that women should not be placed in a position where they're able to teach men. They say that it's morally wrong to place a woman in an egalitarian position with men. And one's position on gender in religious leadership has become, for some, the test of who are following God and who are not. And to this, Jesus would also say, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And lastly, we see the way of dividing the world between Jews and Samaritans in the way that the world is divided between the heterosexual majority and the homosexual minority. And protesters carry signs that proclaim God hates fags and love the sinner, hate the sin, and God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And it's argued that they must be opposed or they will corrupt our children. It's this us and them once again. And one's position on gay marriage has become the test of who are following God and who are not. And to this, Jesus would say, neither this mountain nor Jerusalem, but my ethical teachings in my Sermon on the Mount. And in all the ways that we divide each other, ways that cause us to see others as the enemy, they're ways that echo the first century's divisions of Jews and Samaritans. And we've forgotten the very first teaching of Jesus. We are all children of the same divine parents. We're all on the inside just the same. Jesus died and was resurrected to save all of us from the way of Cain's being against Abel's. And these divisions will one day cease. One day we will all once again have to relearn how to sit around the same family table. And it's this table practice that Jesus put on display in his ministry. You can see it most evidently in Luke's version of the Jesus story. But it was this all-inclusive table practice that got Jesus killed. And I know we're addicted to our exclusive clubs, but Jesus is offering us the privilege in our present age of putting on display what the beautifully restored, radically inclusive age to come will look like. We are called upon to show how this world will look when it's transformed and restored by Jesus fully. If Jesus were alive today, he would tell the story of the good Catholic if he were among Protestants, or the good Protestant if he were among Catholics, or maybe the good Catholic and Protestant if he were among Eastern Orthodox. He would tell the story of the good Muslim, or the good Hindu, or the good Buddhist, especially if he was in the South. He would tell the story of the good terrorist, or the good immigrant, or the good bum on the sidewalk. He would tell the story of the good ordained woman priest or pastor, or the good gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or queer. Whoever the them is in our culture, whoever we've labeled as the enemy, we're going to have to confront Jesus going into Samaria, stopping by the well to talk with this Samaritan who is viewed much the same way that both sides of any issue view each other. And he was inviting her to embrace him as her Messiah. He broke every us and them rule that existed that day. And the question that we as his followers have to ask ourselves is, are we breaking those same rules? Jesus is seeking to create a new humanity, not centered in the divisions that we have created within our culture, but centered in himself. It's comprised of the people of all of our present ways of dividing ourselves, but it's centered in following him. And we have to ask, are we helping him? Or are we standing in his way? It's Jesus and his new world rooted in his Sermon on the Mount by which this new humanity will be defined, and nothing else. We are all in process. We're all on a journey. We're all trying to figure periphery things out, marginal things out. We're all in this process, and we must remember that we're all children of the same God, and that Jesus is seeking to restore and to reconcile all of us to himself and to each other. And it was Jesus's radical inclusivity that got him killed. And we must be careful, or we may one day see that the hammer and nails are once again being raised against this Jesus, but that they're in the hands that we discover are our own instead. Heart group application this week. This week, I want you to spend some time with Jesus. Ask him to show you whom your own Samaritan is that you feel should be excluded, shunned, or simply not associated with. Number two, ask him to show you what these people look like through his eyes rather than the lens of your culture or through your own eyes. And then number three, journal what he shows you and share what you discover with your heart group this upcoming week. Next week, we'll look at the shocker that this wasn't just a Samaritan, but that this was actually a woman that Jesus was seeking out within the context of first century Palestinian Jewish patriarchal standards. There's something we have to notice there. And then after that, the third week, we'll look at Jesus' relation to her, not as a Samaritan nor as a woman in that culture, but simply as a human being with a past that she felt ashamed of. Stay with me over the next few weeks. I promise as we unpack this, it's going to be well worth your time. It's a beautiful picture of God. It's a beautiful picture of how God sees each of us, and a beautiful picture of how we too are to see each other. The picture will emerge from this story, but we have to fit the puzzle pieces together correctly first. Wherever this finds you this week, keep living in love, loving like Jesus, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love you guys. We'll see you next week.